This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. More women are becoming infected with the HIV virus. In fact, in New York City, AIDS is now the leading cause of death among women 15 to 44 years of age. Many women with AIDS are single mothers, facing not only the possibility of death, but the possibility of leaving children alone in the world. Later on the show, we'll hear from the founder of the AIDS group, The Orphan Project. Laura Jimenez is a single mother with AIDS. Two of her children are in their 20s and on their own, but her son Matt is 10, and she's been making arrangements for his care if she dies. Jimenez lives in a housing project in the Bronx. Health problems forced her to give up her job, but she's been working with the People with AIDS Coalition. She's one of the mothers with HIV profiled in a recent edition of Vogue magazine. Jimenez found out she had AIDS in late 1990, but she only recently told her 10-year-old son. I asked her why the time seemed right.
Well, I couldn't hide it. I've done so many things for AIDS, and I've been very active in the AIDS and the Vogue layout that he did with me. I don't know if you people read it, but he was in one of the pictures, and he started getting inquisitive, and I do a lot of things for AIDS, and he's around me, and I just waited for him to finish his test, and we went on vacation, and I chose that moment because I didn't want him to feel that, you know, that I was trying to pressure him into you know, hurting. You know, a lot of kids wonder, you know, what's going to happen to me and things like that.
What was his reaction when you told him?
He cried. The same reaction. And funny, it's the same reaction I had when I found out I was HIV positive. He told me he didn't want me to die, and he cried. And that was my same reaction. I cried, and I said, I'm going to die. And it was like a mirror. And it was very scary, and I assured him that Mommy felt very healthy, and Mommy was taking care of herself, and Mommy had no intentions of dying. And if I did pass away, I had made arrangements for him to be with someone. And he cried a lot. He hugged me. It was a very sad situation. I found it very hard to do, to explain to a 10-year-old. And I asked him if he had any questions, and he said he would like to read the article because I kept the article away from him that was in the Vogue. And I gave him the Vogue, and I made him read it. And he came back and he asked me some more questions. And I tried to answer them as truthfully and as, you know, as I could.
What were some of the other questions that he asked you?
In my interview in Vogue, they explained that when I first found out I attempted suicide by unscrewing the window gates off my bedroom. And I sat there for 6 hours contemplating to jump, because I didn't know what to do. And in the Vogue, it said this, and how I was contemplating divorce, and the only thing that stopped me, I told him, the only thing that stopped me was him, thinking about, you know, I was going to leave him without a mommy, and I didn't want to do that. I told him, you stopped me, Matt, worrying about you, wondering how are you going to feel. And he asked me to see the window. I showed him the window. And he asked me if I would do it again. And I told him no, that I go to therapy now. And I says it's hard at times, but I says I'm learning to deal with it.
One of the things your son wanted to know was what would happen to him if you died. What did you tell him?
I told him that I had made a will, and that his aunt Chicky, or his sister, older sister Lisa, we're going to take care of him, and no matter what, that I would always love him. And it was the hardest thing to do, you know, in my life. Like I explained to the interviewer before, I've been through 2 divorces, and, like, it was amazing how easy it was. When you sit down and you write after, you know, a will, living will, and you sit down and you read it, and what you want to do with your child, you know, it's hard to accept. The day I went to pick it up, it just screwed me up totally emotionally. And I explained to him that he was going to be taken care of, that he had nothing to worry about. And he looked at me and he cried. He says, I don't want you to die. And I says, I don't want to die. And we cried together. And, you know, it's better now. It's better now. He's my daughter and me, we have a relationship, you know, very, we've gotten very close, you know, and I went to Florida to tell my mother, and it was a very bad reaction what I got from my mother.
What kind of bad?
She threw me out of her house.
Why?
She told me I was no damn good.
Because you had AIDS?
Yes. This is what I feel. I don't know. She was totally mad at me, and I don't know. I really, to this day, I haven't talked to her since I came back. I got back on the 28th. And I mean, I feel like somebody's taken a shotgun and shot me again because, you know, dealing with the devastation of having HIV, and I hadn't told her. I kept it from her, but being that I'm going to do a segment on, you know, women in crisis in, for 60 minutes, it's going to be on air on TV, I wanted her to tell her before she seen it on TV. And I didn't want to hurt her in that sense. And I, you know, I wanted to sit down and let her know. And when I, it wound up to be very bitter and very harmful. And I told her in a very bad way, which I, you know, I forgive myself, but I was angry. And she didn't give me the chance to do it the right way.
But how did you tell her?
I, you know, my mother has had a heart attack, and she's had a pacemaker, and she's going blind with her diabetes. And we were in the argument, and I told her, you know, you should stop feeling sorry for yourself and get up and exercise and help yourself with the diabetes and stop eating so much. I says, you're not dying. I says, I'm dying. And I walked away from her, and I left it at that. And I says, you know, I says, I wanted this time to be special. And I see it couldn't, and it has hurt me. Like, I want to see my therapist because I feel like she didn't give me the chance to explain myself and what was happening. And the compassion that I needed from my mother, I didn't get. And now there's a hole in me, you know, where I tried to deal with every day, you know, just surviving and taking care of myself, not for my son, you know, but it's hard, you know. It's hard. Right now, I got a dispossess in the mail because I thought the Division of AIDS Services were going to pick up my rent, and I see they didn't pay my July rent. And, you know, these are things that affect me emotionally.
So what happens now?
Well, you got to go back to the Division of AIDS Services with the dispossess notice, and they have to pay it. But this is, you see, my rent goes directly to housing, and they overlooked it. And this is things, these little things stress one out. Like I got, when I opened up the mailbox and I seen from a lawyer, I opened it up and, you know, my stomach totally flipped on me. You know, and I have to call her back, and I'll have to go sit in this nasty office with seven kind of funguses growing and sit there and wait for them to decide to take care of me. It's totally humiliating as a human being. Not only you have to deal with your sicknesses, it's in a disgusting neighborhood, totally drug-infested, and drug addicts hanging on the corner selling methadone and drugs and whatnot. And when you go in there, I have to go bring my son to this. And I find it's deploring as a person, as a human being. You know, I worked, I've taken care of my children, you know, I've done what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, not only dealing with the HIV, I'm trying to bring myself up that, you know, if I can help another woman understand this, you know, because AIDS, I figured it didn't touch me. I wasn't a drug addict and I wasn't gay. And I went into total shock when I found out.
My guest is Laura Jimenez. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Laura Jimenez, is a single mother with AIDS. She has two grown children and a 10-year-old son. By the time she was diagnosed with AIDS, she'd been infected with HIV for 6 years. How did you find out you had AIDS?
I was being treated at Mount Sinai Hospital. I was going back for dysplasia. Dysplasia is something's wrong with my cervix. I was getting irregular periods, night sweats. And being that I didn't fit into the drug criteria, I don't look like a junkie, I never was a junkie, so that was the farthest thing from their mind, testing me for HIV. after I went through a series of tests and biopsies for cancer and everything else, everything came out negative. So one of the nurses suggested I would take the HIV test. So I figured everything else came out negative. I says, I'm not a junkie and I'm not gay, so I'm all right. So I took it. And when I found out my T cells were 190, they went down to 170. And now they're 365, and due to the medication I'm on.
Do you know how you got it?
Sexually. Oh, I know who gave it to me. I found out who gave it to me.
Do you think he knew when he gave it to you?
When I met him and I confronted him and I kept on telling him, does he know what he did to my life? He swore to me. He says, Laura, not you. And we've seen each other for quite a long time. And I asked him, I said, were you a junkie or you were something that I don't know? Or you, what were you doing? Going, you know, around screwing everything in town? And I was so furious, and he kept on saying he was sorry, and he was sorry. And I hit him. I smacked him across his face. And this was in the clinic, the clinic I go to, Mount Sinai Hospital, and my girlfriend came out, and I was hysterical crying. I kept on yelling at him, you know what you've done to my life. And he kept on telling me he was sorry, that he didn't know. And my girlfriend put me in a room, and she calmed me down, and she told me, you know, she says, there's a possibility he didn't know, just like you did. I says, why me, you know? And that I said it, but now when you put the pieces together, you know, when you have unsafe sex and you don't know what this person has done in their past, and I still don't know if he was going around having unprotected sex with a lot of women, or he was a junkie. To me, that I know him for 5 years, he was never in that criteria of a junkie, you know. But, you know, like I say, you never know.
You've made plans that if something did happen to you, that either your son's aunt or his sister would take care of him. Was it really hard to bring it up with them?
Yes. Yes, it was very hard.
How did you do it? How did you bring up the subject?
I asked around. See, my daughter, she was in an unstable relationship, and she's my oldest. She's 24. And I sat down, I told her, I told my son. And my son's life wasn't too stable, so I want somebody that I know is going to take care of my 10-year-old. And my daughter is his second mother, and I sat down and I told her, the reason why I wasn't leaving Matt to her, because her life wasn't too stable, and she has nothing to show for it. And even though she had 1 year of college, she went back to school now, and she got her medical assistant's degree, and she just started a job in Lincoln Hospital, and I don't know if I motivated her, which I hope I did. But she tells me she's not leaving her brother with nobody. I arranged to have Matthew with a person that is financially secure, drug-free, has a job. This is my older sister. My older sister never took drugs. And, you know, I'm looking for a place where he can stay with the family. You know, this because I've seen a lot of children. I had two friends of mine. One died of an asthma, and one died of HIV-related illness. One of them, she had three children. She left them to a grandmother. Her husband she was living with took the recently born, and they took the little girl and the boy to Florida. The girl was 13, 14 years old. A month later, she hung herself in the basement, and she said she left a note. She wanted to be with her mother. People don't realize the traumatic experience it is on a child. And I also seen my girlfriend died of asthma, and there's a fight over the children. And I feel the children that are dealing with the grief, and they have to worry about who's going to take care of me. I don't believe that these children should have to suffer.
Do you feel that your relationship with your son has changed since he found out that you have AIDS?
Yes. Yeah, he's very close to me now. When I talk to him, I don't get that bad reaction. You know, like a little sassiness, I don't get that no more. When I scold him, he thinks about something. I let him know that, you know, I'm disappointed in him if he does something wrong. And it has affected it. There's no way it can affect a household. You see a person taking medication, there's times that I can't even get out of bed. You know, I'm tired, totally drained. And it hurts.
So how has your health been?
Well, when I found out, I went from 190, my T-cells, to 170. I went on AZT immediately. I was on Bactrim to prevent pneumonia. They give you all these medications. The AZT is very toxic. I was taking it. I had constant diarrhea, constant vomiting. I lost something like 75 pounds. I looked like I was on crack. A lot of people thought I went on a massive diet. A lot of people asked me if I was on crack. And I told them, yeah, and I walk away, you know, stupid people, because I didn't want to relate what was going on with me. The AZT is so toxic, they knocked it down to from 500 milligrams a day to 3, and it's still, I lost the, it's called monocophy, I think it's called. It deteriorates the muscles in your bones. I had to stop working. I worked for a full year until I found out I couldn't walk. I was losing my legs due to the medication. Now I'm on DDI because I complained a lot, and the AZT was helping me deteriorate faster. I'm on DDI. My T cells have gone up. I gained 30 pounds, which I've always been a heavy woman, but I feel a lot better this way, a lot stronger. My legs are, you could say, 90% back, I just take care of myself.
Well, I want to, wish you the best. I wish you good health. And I thank you very much for talking with us.
No problem.
Laura Jimenez spoke to us from her apartment in the Bronx. Kara Levine is concerned that the children orphaned by AIDS will become a lost generation. She co-authored a study which projected that by the turn of the century, between 80,000 and 125,000 children in the United States will have lost their mothers to AIDS. This will not only be a personal tragedy for each of those children, it will be a social crisis. Levine is the founder of the Orphan Project, devoted to studying and advocating policies and programs that meet the needs of children surviving a parent's death from AIDS. She's the former director of the Citizens Commission on AIDS. Levine says the orphans of AIDS are an especially vulnerable group.
I think many of them are very vulnerable, not just because they come from poor families, but because they live in communities where there's violence all the time, where there's the ravages of drugs, where there's chronic unemployment, where there's poor health care and poor health status. One study by Barbara Drayman of the Division of AIDS Services here in New York City found that, looking at teenagers, found that a large majority of the kids had experienced more than one significant loss, such as divorce, separation, incarceration of a parent in the previous year, so that the loss of a parent or the death of, or the illness of a parent with HIV is probably not the only thing that's going on in that child's life. And it's the accumulation of all of these traumas that I think really do present a unique problem that makes this problem different from the sad plight, but still somewhat more manageable, of a child, say, whose mother dies of cancer or whose parent is killed in an automobile accident. Those are tragedies nonetheless, but they are not in the same qualitative league as some of the stories of these youngsters.
There are a lot of teenagers who are being left without parents.
Yes.
Because of AIDS. Are they, do they have any unique problems?
Yes. I was surprised and then not surprised when I found, both from the epidemiological analysis and from all the conversations I've been having with service providers and families, what's happening is that a lot of the teenagers are becoming, in a sense, the caregivers for the younger children. They're becoming the caregivers for the sick parent. They're becoming adults before their time. And on the other hand, there are some who are almost totally without adult supervision, and they are beginning to act out their anger, their frustration, and their despair almost in many serious ways, in terms of getting in trouble with the law, in terms of teen pregnancies and so forth, and risky behavior that may, in fact, put them at risk for AIDS.
What do you think the social service system needs to do to respond to children who are orphaned from AIDS?
Well, I think one of the things it needs to do is to have special training for all the staff who work with these kids and families so that they're sensitive to the problems of stigma, to the problems of confidentiality, to the all of the issues that pervade these the kids' lives and the families' lives, so that they can do the best with what they have. There's really a desperate need for training. Then I think there's really a need for something specialized that will refer families to some of the services that are available. And there are some services, but they're not coordinated. There's not a whole system set up. My assistant has compiled a resource guide for New York City, and I was quite impressed with how many agencies are providing something. So often it's a question of getting people to know that there's something out there for them, getting them to feel comfortable in going for help if it's in bereavement counseling or whatever the issue might be. But we don't have any overall coordination. We don't have any overall plan. I think we do need at least some direction in that regard.
Kara Levine directs the Orphan Project in New York. She edited a book called A Death in the Family, Orphans of the HIV Epidemic, which will be published in the fall by the United Hospital Fund of New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.